Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that looks high and low for quality cinema, from mainstream theaters to art houses to the screen set up in the comfort of our own homes. One of the films that we'll be discussing this week is Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, which stars Margot Robbie as the former paramour of supervillain the Joker, who is intent on becoming a master criminal in her own right. Then we'll preview two upcoming film festivals, the Spokane International Film Festival, which kicks off February 28th, and the 2020 Social Justice Film Festival, which will be held this weekend at the Magic Lantern with a final film to play Tuesday night at the Gonzaga University School of Law. Let's begin with a bit of DC Comics type foreplay. With recent movies starring Brie Larson as Captain Marvel and Gail Gadot as Wonder Woman, both goody-goodies out to save humanity, it's only natural that an anti-hero should have her own film. And that particular anti-hero is Harley Quinn, the crazed former psychiatrist and one-time girlfriend of Batman's arch-nemesis, the Joker, played by the two-time Oscar nominee Margot Robbie, whom you would never suspect is from Australia. Her American accent is that good. Harley Quinn, get it? Teams up with a trio of other tough cookies named Black Canary, Huntress, and Renee Montoya to save a young girl from the clutches of would-be Gotham mob boss Roman Sionis, played by Ewan McGregor. Directed by Chinese-born filmmaker Kathy Yan, Birds of Prey has all the requisite action, tempered by a few jokes delivered well enough by the talented Robbie to compete with the many male-dominated studies of cartoon-inspired violence, and actually to be more than a bit better than quite a few of them.
Well, I was dreading going to this film. I mean, we've seen the trailers for months and months, and every time the trailer comes on, I say to Dan, please don't make me go to this movie. So I
was
dragged
didn't we?
There
didn't
kicking we, and screaming. Thank you, Nathan.
Well, figuratively, I want to say.
Okay, point well taken. Yep. So, but I have to say, I surprised myself. I had a good time at this movie. I thought it was, you know, not your typical superhero, supervillain movie. I loved the cast of characters. Some people who we haven't seen in roles such as this, like Rosie Perez. I haven't seen her for a while on screen.
Yeah, a long time.
So that was great. Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I thought that Margot Robbie's performance was really spot on. I mean, she's such a pretty woman that you don't know if she could actually play an action hero or villain, I should say, which is probably more difficult
what she
in
did
some ways.
In both cases, in I, Tonya, a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
both
sure.
A villain and an action star.
So basically, you're saying that Tonya Harding is and Harley Quinn.
Oh, I hadn't really thought of it that way.
Campus,
oh,
yeah.
I hadn't really thought of it that way. But yeah, I love the fact that Ewan McGregor, you know, is a protagonist in this particular setting. And I thought that the pacing was great, but most important, the music was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I actually liked this quite a bit, too. I had a good time. I mean, I think that the tone that this adopts, this kind of winking, fourth wall breaking, we're being very meta here kind of thing, which I think has been kind of repopularized by the Deadpool movies.
Deadpool,
I mean, this feels
yes.
more like Deadpool Birds of Prey does than something like
Suicide Squad. Right, which is where she was introduced.
Correct, yeah. Where Harley Quinn, at least the version played by Margot Robbie, was introduced to us. And I think that's growing a little tiresome. I think that a lot of the times these filmmakers are doing this thing where
they're rewinding time,
they're putting funny captions on the screen, and it's kind of to disguise the fact that there's not that much story here. The story of Birds of Prey is essentially this kind of neo-noir thing where you've got a crime kingpin and a femme fatale and a nightclub singer and a cop that's maybe going to go over to the dark side and a teenage pickpocket. And it gets a little bit complicated, especially because they're reversing time and coming back again and saying, oh, no, wait, that's not true. Let's go back and see how it actually
and
was
And they're
before.
Also playing against the gender tropes because this is all women doing this in the name of women's emancipation,
all the villains, at least the villains that the Birds of Prey are fighting, are almost exclusively men.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, you've got the MacGuffin, which is this diamond they have to get because the atomic makeup of the diamond has all of these secret
codes.
The location of this one family's for. So it's all kind of nonsense. It's really just an excuse
well, do
for Margot
go
Robbie
to
and
these
actors.
Well, do people go to these movies for the plot?
Yeah, maybe not. And so I think what we're looking at here then is the style and at the tone. And I think the style here is more controlled than it was in something like Suicide Squad, which was – I mean there were lots of reports about the difficult production of that and how it was kind of cut apart and put back together again in the editing room and then reshot and all that stuff. This feels like there was more of a vision there. I don't know how powerful of a vision that is, but I think that you can see what Kathy Ann was trying to do, and there's an actual story here that has an A, B, and C kind of plot going on. And I like the fact that Harley Quinn, at least Margot Robbie's take on Harley Quinn, has at least in the last movie, has almost always been defined by her association with Joker. And in fact, in the first few acts of Birds of Prey, people are asking, oh, where's Joker? And she doesn't want to tell anyone that they've broken up because right. then she thinks like all
She'll
of her power
her
will
power,
go away.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in this movie, and you know, I think it is important that there is a female director and female screenwriter behind this. Harley Quinn isn't seen as an object of lust, or at least as far as the camera is concerned, or as a romantic prospect as far as the script is concerned. We're just kind of watching her pick up the pieces of this shattered relationship she had. And in fact, the only thing that she makes eyes at in this movie is a breakfast sandwich. And there's kind of a running joke about that,
yeah, and
which
that
I thought had kind of –
breakfast sandwich is delicious.
I mean, it looked really good. Yeah. I thought that joke kind of had diminishing returns. But I think there are good jokes within Birds of Prey. I liked this cast. It was great to see Rosie Perez mm-hmm. in an actual role again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I like the style of this and the fact that it moved. It felt like a brisk kind of 100-minute action movie.
And I'm always somewhat equivocal about these looking good and kicking butt women's movies. But for whatever reason, this had enough humor in it. And it also, her violence or her vengeance or her revenge fantasies come on the heels of this like traumatic breakup. And so it sort of epitomizes what everyone might want to do for one megasecond in the post-breakup
Go
mindset.
Atomic.
Right, exactly.
You know, one thing we have to talk about is, or at least we have to mention, is that they changed the title. You know, I've been calling it Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn, and they've changed it to Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, at least that's
how
it's
being referred
to.
Was that because of its box office lackluster?
I don't know what they were thinking with that. I mean, it Birds of Prey did not do all that well on opening weekend. I'm not sure.
It didn't meet expectations.
Yeah.
It did fairly
it did,
well.
It did all right. I mean, I don't know if that's because Harley Quinn isn't as marketable a presence as somebody like Joker. I don't know if it's because of the – it's a February release and it's just kind of a weird time to be putting out a movie like this.
Or that it's simply – that it maybe doesn't appeal to fanboys the way Deadpool or Suicide Squad would be.
And it's also possible that Suicide Squad was so bad that
people
thought,
don't have
I don't want to go back.
Well, and that's sort of where I was coming from. But at the same time, I also believe, honestly, that the trailers for this movie did it no favors whatsoever because that really deterred me from going to see it. It didn't highlight – maybe the short snippets did not highlight maybe the humor and the ensemble cast because that's another thing. We've talked about these individual actors in this film, but it really does in some strange way work among this group that are very different character types, very different physical types, very different ages.
Yeah,
and it really does work well as sort of a group buddy.
Yeah, it's about their camaraderie.
Movie, right.
And I think that you know, I want to go back to something that you said, Mary Pat, that this idea that a lot of these blockbusters are doing these kind of girl power moments. You know, you had that moment in The Avengers where all of the female characters lined up, but it felt more like lip service to be like, see, we're checking all of our boxes. It felt kind of hollow. This movie is, you know, it's about women's empowerment. I mean, emancipation is in the title of the film.
Or the original title.
The original title. But I do think that it feels earned here because it never feels like they're laying it on too thick or that they're trying to prove a point. It's just like, we're going to make a really fun, stylish, B-grade action movie, and it's just going to have all of these women characters in it. And it's going to be about how they basically have to find each of their individual strengths and use that to come together as
a
unit.
And it also –
which Suicide Squad didn't do.
If you look at each of their backstories, we can see the way women are disadvantaged in the workplace of the Rosie Perez character or in their family setting. And we have a couple of examples of that or in their relationships. And so it sort of touches on all the ways in which women are disempowered. And then I think that is a significant overlay to what's happening.
That's a good point.
Another thing that I want to point out here is that, in movies past in which they've had women in these roles, they've all been standard male-dominated, male-themed kind of movies in which women stand and duke it out with guys. And I give the UFC and particularly Ronda Rousey and people like that credit for changing things so that you see women doing submission roles, jiu-jitsu, and all kinds of action that is much more believable than a woman standing duking it out with a man, which might happen on one or two occasions. But for the most part, you use intelligence and you use a certain kind of strength and skill to overcome size and speed.
I don't know. There's quite a bit of women punching dudes.
I'm not
movie.
Saying women can't punch. What I'm saying is that if you look at what they mostly do is they do a lot of gymnastics and jiu-jitsu kind of martial arts, which is a much more believable than movies past.
Brute strength.
Well, and you also talk about, you know, and we've talked about the male gaze in other movies and so forth. And I felt as though the costuming here was not intentionally playing to this Victoria's Secret mm-hmm. type. I mean, I'm not to say that they're fully clothed in every scene, but I felt as though that was something that was on the consciousness of the director,
felt
too.
More sensible. And also, yes. I want to say that we've praised Margot Robbie and Rosie Perez. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is good in this movie, too. I thought that Ewan McGregor was a terrific villain.
Yeah, I mean, he
is taking a knife and fork to the scenery in this movie. He's a lot of fun, and I want more villains like that. Yeah. Like, let's just go cartoonish with it. I think it works really well here.
And that was Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts and Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the upcoming Spokane International and Social Justice Film Festivals. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. Let's now move to a couple of events that tend to occur on an annual basis, 2020 versions of the Spokane International Film Festival and the Social Justice Film Festival. Let's begin with a preview of a documentary feature that should be a highlight of SPIFF 2020. And that documentary is titled China Love, which is scheduled to play on the second day of this year's SPIFF, which opens on February 28th and closes on March 6th. We'll take a far more comprehensive look at SPIFF 2020 in a couple of weeks. But for now, let's address one of its special offerings. Most China scholars know that just four decades ago, marriage was something that had little to do with love or even mutual attraction. It was something to be arranged by a matchmaker or by the government. Today, though, a modern China has embraced the notion of marital fantasy in the practice of pre-wedding photograph sessions, affairs that can cost thousands upon thousands of dollars and are limited only by the imagination of the brides and grooms themselves. Directed by Olivia Martin McGuire, an Australian photographer who lives and works in Shanghai, China Love explores what seemingly overnight has become a hot business and ends up being both an illuminating look at what marriage in China was and an entertaining portrayal of what it's become.
Yeah, in fact, there's so much going on in this movie, China Love. I almost wished it had been maybe even an hour longer or,
a mini series or something,
because they keep introducing. And I mean, I think that's a good thing. There's a lot of good stuff in this. They keep introducing all of these new wrinkles into the very theme that they're putting out here. And you keep thinking, oh, that's fascinating enough to warrant its own film.
Agreed.
Because on the surface, this is a film about the pre-wedding photography industry in China, which I think is a good enough hook on its own. And we see these super elaborate photo shoots that cost – I think he says the top is $300,000.
$400,000.
$400,000. Well, what's the right price tag for a pre-wedding?
Well, I guess if you're going to go to Antarctica and get these photos
I guess
taken.
So. I mean they're doing them underwater and they're hanging from wires. And then there are the more modest ones where they're just outside with a beautiful backdrop. So I think that's fascinating on its own. But then this movie gets into sort of the social and cultural expectations of being a young person in China and being of a certain age, I guess, and still not being married. They talk about the economy of China and, you know, sort of this bustling industry of billionaires and the guy that has cornered this market specifically. Mm-hmm. And we kind of follow him and his American assistant. So there's some culture clash going on there. And then, of course, it's about government and the politics of the country. And there is talk about the one-child policy and how that has affected this entire thing as well, that there's even more pressure put on these kids to get married because it reflects poorly on the parents as well if their kids aren't married. So I thought all of that was really rich and I sort of just wanted it to keep going. And then there's this really lovely sequence near the end where all of these people that got married, you know, under communist rule
and 76, yeah,
and never got these big elaborate photo shoots, they just got this one kind of black and white passport photo almost, go through this, I think it's like a nonprofit organization or something, right, in China, and get, you know, the wedding photos of their dreams. And it's so sweet. But also very sad in a way, because you realize that more so then than now, they may have just been put together whether they wanted to get married or not. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. And we saw a bit of this in something like The Farewell from last year, where it's about a wedding in China. We saw elements of this in the Oscar-winning documentary American Factory about the differences between the work
culturally,
ethic of Chinese,
yes,
people and the work ethic of American people. So all of that is in this. It's kind of this tapestry of a film, but it's really interesting.
I agree. And the thing that I wanted to know a bit more about in this particular film was, how did this happen? I mean, so
– how did the whole wedding become about?
Yeah, pre-wedding, yeah, photo. How did this burgeon into this like multi-million dollar industry?
Because when we
for
say pre-wedding, it's usually months before.
3 months before,
right,
the wedding.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
just to be clear, what's showcased in this particular film is the fact that people go to these different studios and they have everything available for you in terms of the makeup, the hairstyle, the clothing, and then they have these different artificial settings. So if you can't afford to go outside mainland China, and it actually says that 90% of people in China do not have passports.
Yeah.
And so this is an artificial recreation of some sort of 16th century palace in France or, mm-hmm, something along, mm-hmm, those lines.
And I agree with Nathan. This should have been a miniseries, because at one point there's just the throwaway line. In the last 40 years, China has experienced the largest economic growth of any country in world history.
Yeah,
and
there
it's
are
like,
more,
how did,
there
how
are
did
more billionaires
like
in China
more,
than
exactly
anywhere else.
And
yeah,
then there's the guy who's the owner of the business, yeah, who is like some Silicon Valley,
mogul.
Mogul, yeah, who's basically going in there and rules with an iron hand, offering, you know, I only recognize the top 10 in every one of these categories.
And the online reviews that come in for this wedding photography business, when they come in and there is a negative aspect, he finds the employee that negative aspect is about and takes money from them. Like, he said, I used
publicly
to take it out of,
yes,
their paycheck. But
that wasn't so meaningful.
Yeah, so I make them pay me back in cash. It's,
yeah,
stuff like that. Like,
right,
that again, alone, that's worthy of a documentary.
So we need to move on here. I just wanted to say that was China Love, and I misspoke before. China Love is going to be playing at 7:30 on Thursday night, March 5th at the Magic Lantern Theater. So let's close with a look at the 2020 Social Justice Film Festival. Mary Pat?
Well, we are fortunate in our community to have a lot of film happenings going on at various points throughout the year, and I'll make reference to a couple of them later. If you're listening to this on Saturday afternoon, you're going to have to rush right over to the Magic Lantern to see the Social Justice Film Festival 2020. And Spokane is screening The Best of the Fest. So this is a nationwide effort, socialjusticefilmfestival.org. And our particular incarnation is based out of Seattle. So its festival screens a larger number of movies in October. And so they are bringing over some select films to screen at this fest. And the way that this is set up is on Saturday, February 15th, and Sunday, February 16th at the Magic Lantern, there are programs at 2:30 and 6:30. And then on Tuesday night, the 18th, at Gonzaga Law School, there's a screening of the documentary True Justice that we talked about on this program involving Bryan Stevenson, lawyer who started the Equal Justice Initiative in Alabama. But I would say some of the highlights of this Social Justice Film Festival this year are on Saturday afternoon, The Condor and the Eagle, which is about the Amazonian jungle and activists and advocates for environmental justice and their work down there. And this is for indigenous activists that are showcased here. I think a rare opportunity to see on the big screen Learning to Skateboard in a War Zone if you're a girl, which won the Academy Award for Short Documentary.
Which we correctly predicted on the show
yes,
that it would
we
win.
Yes, we did. Thank you, everyone. And shout out to you, Nathan, for your love of Parasite.
Oh, yes. I helped it win.
Yes, you did. I think you did. But Saturday at 6:30.
Got a little bit greedy there, I think, taking home four awards. Oh, no.
It deserved them.
Learning to Skateboard in a War Zone if you're a girl is just the most touching film I've seen in years. So if you have the opportunity, you should check that out. And then Hurdle, Palestinian film about people who are dealing with the separation.
That's an interesting movie, though, because it combines gymnastics and this whole discipline
right.
of jumping from, you know, I mean, it's these two guys who are teaching about how to handle the whole difficulty of living in Palestine at this particular time.
Right. And then on Sunday afternoon, there's a documentary about women who are re-entering society after having been incarcerated or recovering from addiction. And I think that is a real showcase. And then finally, a story of the Patronelle, the Total Experience Choir, recognized Seattle institution.
Yeah.
Yes. And so this Social Justice Film Festival, get information at socialjusticefilmfestival.org. And again, we have other things such as Monday Movies, Meaningful Movies, the Spokane Falls Community College International Film Festival happening. So we'll try to keep you apprised of these other things. But rush on out there and catch one of these Social Justice Film Festival.
Because the admission is free. That's
yes.
the
Ooh,
best part.
Yes,
admission
free.
Is free.
Yes.
But you do accept donations, I understand.
Of course.
That was our preview of this weekend Social Justice Film Festival. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed The Birds of Prey and the fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn and China Love, one of the films that will play at the 2020 Spokane International Film Festival, which begins its week-long run on February 28th. Let's take this moment to thank Pete Glarborg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you, too, our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot in the radio dial, when we'll again try to separate cinema wheat from cinema chaff. Until then, remember these words from the one and only Harley Quinn. So what if I'm crazy? The best people are. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.